So, patrons, I have a question. Actually, I might write my column about this week.
Andy Rooney.
Have you ever wondered? I want a function in my music service. I'm finally on board with doing music services streaming, right? I don't need to manage everything myself. I would like minor feature requests is the ability to upload your own songs. Spotify allows that. Google Music allows that. That's not that unusual. Apple Music's really crappy about that, but whatever. The big thing I want is the ability to have playlists as subsets of other playlists. Mm. Now, I may be the only one on earth who wants this. But, you know, because I'm also the guy who puts old commercials in his music playlist. But I want the ability to have a playlist of oldies that I know I like, but then have a subset playlist in there that is just new songs that I can, like, swap out. Or maybe even it's somebody else's managed playlist that they're always putting new songs in and put that in there so that when I play this master playlist, it's my oldies mixed in with new songs, kind of like a radio station. Does that make sense? Do you understand what I'm trying to get at?
It's totally a Tom Merritt thing, too. That's something
I'm the only one who wants to do this.
And I don't think it's a bad request. I'd love to see a more fluid functions like that. And also, just one comment about your Apple's not great at letting you upload your existing music. The irony is that they're the place we all got a lot of that stuff.
Buy the music. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That annoys me, too, but I haven't been that worked up about it because honestly, I have embraced no longer filling hard drives full of songs. I don't care anymore.
Yeah, I'm good with that. It's just that I was actually replicating a playlist from Google Music to Apple Music the other day because I'm trying out Apple Music just to see. Mm-hmm. And there were a bunch of songs that I just couldn't put over there because they're weird, you know, geeky, like MC Frontalot. Well, MC Frontalot is not a good example because he's in Apple's catalog. That's a good example. I can't remember their names now at the top of my head suddenly, but you know,
Paul Storm,
no. Rare. No, Paul and Storm are totally in there. Rarer than that. you know, bands from Austin that I ripped from CD that never had a major distribution deal. And so they're not in the Apple Music catalogs, weird stuff like that. Can't add that to my Apple Music playlist.
Yeah. That'd be cool if I could just loosen that up some. I've been very happy with Apple Music, and I tried Spotify and was okay with it. Google Music, not as much, but you know, they're all kind of feature for feature, pretty similar. But I think that the real thing that will keep people jumping to other services is what are you letting people do? And one of them is what you just described. Yeah. Or
Google Music has the easiest upload your own music policy. You just it's like a locker. You put all your music up there and they have very few restrictions on what can go in there. And then you can add it to any playlist anywhere. Spotify's, you've got to have it on your, you've got to do it on your desktop and then sync it over to mobile and it works. All right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I listen to music though.
Yeah. You like music. You'd like to listen to songs.
I use Apple Music exclusively. As soon as Erdio shut down, I tried it and it was fine.
I am still sad that my third wave ska playlist from RDO never got saved.
Oh. Yeah, it was the saving of the, I had made a lot of great playlists and I just like never tried again. I don't care anymore. But they all seem relatively the same. I mean, most of the features, it's like you can discover new music, you know who the new, you know, top of the charts are, new albums of the week, genre searches.
I basically want to program my own radio station, which is why I want playlists that I can embed inside of other playlists or nest inside of other
playlists. That I like, and let you upload your own bumper stingers and like commentary.
No, that'd be great.
Can't you combine two playlists? So it wouldn't be nesting.
You can combine them, but then they're a new playlist. You can't manage one and then have it feed in like an object-oriented thing.
That could be more dynamic. That would be really cool.
You know, I want like, you know, my master playlist to have as an element Tom's new songs playlist, and then I can just pull things in and out of that one and not have to go hunt them down, because you know, I mean, obviously you can pull things in and out of any playlist, but right now, if I put a new song in, it then gets mixed in with the rest. And new songs, I guess, could always be at the bottom. So maybe I could do that, but I don't know.
I feel like, yeah, it's depending on how you want to use a digital music subscription. Because what you're describing, I'm like, yeah, I guess if I wanted to do that and I couldn't, that would be really annoying. Yes. But I'm like, but I don't want to do that. I'm so far into like $10 a month, just like give me new albums and I'll like listen to them once and then move on. That, you know, I use it really differently. Like I don't, my music library is, you know, I pay for, you know, the iTunes match every year and it's like, I don't care about any of that stuff. Mm. Yeah, CDs have been long sold to Amoeba.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, I keep trying to tell Eileen we should get rid of our CDs because they're all backed up and available elsewhere, and I've got them on a hard drive.
She's like,
no, but what if we lose them? It's a sentimental attachment.
Totally. And also, I know firsthand, and it probably differs between record stores, but Amoeba, which is a huge record store for anybody who doesn't know about it, they didn't really give me much money, and I brought in many boxes of stuff that I, you know, I thought I was going to be walking out of there with a few $100, and like it wasn't really.
Ours have no resale value because they don't have the jewel cases anymore.
Oh well, yeah, that's they'll just throw you out at that point.
You'll be lucky if they'll give you a quarter.
Yeah. In fact, the woman I remember, she was like, it was basically like she was doing me a favor, and she's like, you know, you could have just taken this to Goodwill and gotten a tax write off. And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess so.
This is a very familiar side of things from my years at Half Price Books. You know, back then CDs were actually something we could pay for. Not a lot, but we could pay for them. But people would bring in old books and we'd just be like, you know, you might want to take them to Goodwill because we can give you 25 cents for your entire box because they're not going to sell.
You're right.
Yeah. Half Price Books was the worst too because the corporate policy was never to offer zero. So we'd always offer 25 cents, which to some people, you know, they brought in six boxes of old National Geographics and we'd be like, 25 cents? They're like, why are you insulting me with 25 cents? I'm like,
right.
At least I'm allowed.
Why don't you take it to Recycler and I'm sure you'll get more for turning it in.
Yeah.
Is Roger crunchy for everybody or just me?
I wasn't sure if it was just me. Yeah.
It came back better now.
Mm-hmm. All right, hold on.
Oh, sound good. Well, goodbye, Roger. Yep.
I'm just glad it isn't me for once. My God.
Sound granola bar or
is you're it better. A bar?
You're better.
You're smooth and figgy.
Getting figgy with it.
Like figgy pudding. So I walked out this morning. Speaking of figs, we have a fig tree in the backyard. And a lot of times the figs fall behind the fence and they get all moldy. You know, they just.
It's a metaphor. Yeah.
And they attract bugs. So I hear a buzzing over there and I'm always like, oh yeah, and the decomposing fig has some bugs on it. This morning I walk out to let the dogs out and I hear buzzing right to my right. And immediately my mind goes, is there a fig on the wall? No, there are bees covering the light in our backyard for no apparent reason. And I'm like, are they trying to build a hive in the light?
So, I don't like that story at all.
There's a term for it, but it happened in my sister's place. They actually swarmed her around her electrical box on the outside, but there's enough of a gap between that box and the inside that they were coming inside.
Oh wow! Yeah.
And I don't know if it's like their colony collapsed or the queen died and they just flee, trying to make a new one or
there's
something.
There's a spider that hangs out by that light that I totally tolerate because, hey, spider, good job. Catch all the flies and stuff for trying to fly into our house. You eat up, stay outside. We're cool. He was just kind of cowering in the corner. Like, I can't handle all these bees. You know, I just realized I've never asked that spider's name.
Who would probably say,
where's the real problem then here, Tom?
Charlotte.
Is it you?
He's one of my closest friends.
And yet, you barely know him.
I barely know him. Do I really know him at all?
It's a metaphor.
Yeah, I don't know about
figs are a metaphor. Spiders. Spider's a metaphor.
Are you a spider man?
Maybe.
pretty good.
Are you a spider man?
Spider
man. You know, I want to tweet this out today because I haven't been doing that, and I need to remind people.
Fully support that.
Sarah, I love your colors today. You're like, it's all Halloween over there and like fall and stuff. Oh,
well, thanks. You know, I actually feel slightly Handmaid's Tale, but I wanted to see like, okay, well, if I wear like, because I mean, I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out like how I light this background so it doesn't look just like a bunch of junk and how prints in front of that might look. So it's all a big experiment.
I don't find it at all distracting. I think it's very nice.
Well, thank you. Good. And yeah, I guess it is pumpkin-y.
Yeah, it's getting me in the mood for all this Halloween time and Harvest Moon stuff and all that.
It's our pumpkin spice DTNS. Yep.
So if I go to dailytechnewsshow.com/live, it's still another click. That probably isn't just the best way to do this, even though the URL makes the most sense.
Roger.
Hey, Roger.
Yeah.
No, it's not. There's not another click. dailytechnewsshow.com/live, and then it's with Scott Johnson.
I think she means when you go to dailytechnewsshow.com and then you click live.
Oh.
No, I'm at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Right. Yeah.
And it tells me to watch or listen live on Diamond Club or Alpha Geek Media.
Right. And then there's an embed below with today's episode.
Where you just hit play on it.
But why don't we?
I think what you're saying is like when I tell people frogpants.tv, it forwards to the actual Twitch page or wherever the live stream page is. So if there was like a live YouTube page, it'd be one less click if it went.
Here's the thing. There does not seem to be a single page that will always have our live version, which is why I created this page. It used to be I embedded the YouTube live stream, but it didn't show these hangouts on air. It would only show if we streamed directly.
Oh, right.
So I put that watch or listen live at diamondclub.tv and Alpha Geek Media. But then Roger, a few weeks ago, started to embed the current episode every day, which he's been very good about. So my thinking is you go to that page, you see the big video, you'll press play, you won't read the rest of it, and you'll start watching the show.
And the only reason we're looking at yesterday is just because it hasn't started yet.
Well, no, it should say with Scott Johnson.
3140.
Well, maybe she's...
You might.
So that's the other thing.
Okay, it did just refresh.
Yeah.
You had a cached version of the page, which was also a confusing things.
Well, now this is less of an issue because I was like, well, why am I looking at yesterday's guys?
Yeah.
So anyway, gotcha. Okay. All right. Got it. My bad.
Somebody's.
Sometimes caches embeds. It's annoying.
Cache embed.
You changed it. Doesn't know what to do with itself.
So TwitchCon's happening and I'm leaving town.
TwitchCon.
TwitchCon's
where?
In Long Beach.
Yeah, starts this weekend.
It's in the LBC.
There's a lot of kids there.
A lot of Diamond Clubbers there.
Yeah, fair number. A few Frog Panthers.
There'll be a Justin Robert Younger there.
Yep, that's true.
And an Ashley Paramore.
Mm-hmm. I hope they introduce that long-awaited mobile streaming app because they need to.
By the way, Justin is not going to be in my house. Couldn't
have
Oops. But he's going to be on the show, right?
He'll be on the show still, yeah. But he'll be from another location.
Will be from Long Beach?
I don't know. He said he had a contender thing that he has to do, so he can't fit in the travel time.
I got other friends, Tom.
I got better offers.
I think he's going to try to pop down to BlizzCon for a hot minute.
Yeah, that's what he told me.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
PatreCon is at the same time as BlizzCon. So when are you doing your cool thing?
So our live audience panel TV thing is on Saturday at 11 local time, I think.
11 a.m.?
Yeah,
not
Saturday.
11 p.m.
So okay. Final day.
All right.
Other than that, everything else is super open. So
I have to look at the PatreCon. PatreCon's downtown LA, so it's not close.
No, that's not close. Well, if you do, you can. If not, it's on the virtual ticket, so.
Well, I also have a ticket to BlizzCon because I didn't realize that they were scheduling these at the same time.
Oh, you got a ticket. Did you get it? Was it a press pass?
To PatreonCon or to BlizzCon? No, I bought my BlizzCon.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Oh, I need to get tickets for Kamikaze.
I'm actually flying down there on Halloween now because they want us early for some rehearsal stuff.
Oh, and, wow. Fancy.
Never flown on Halloween in my entire life, so it'll be fun.
It'll be spooky.
I'm usually here chucking candy at kids.
Are you flying into the OC?
Yeah. Well, no, I'm going to go to John Wayne because I freaking hate LAX.
Well, and it's closer anyway.
And it's closer. A little more money, but they're flipping the bill on this. So.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, maybe I wonder when Patrick's going to get into town. Do you know?
At the same time, because he and I have to be there the second day together.
Is he also, but I bet he's flying into LAX. So I wonder, maybe I'll give him a ride and I'll meet up with you guys or something.
Sure. Heck yeah.
I have physical therapy at 5:20 though.
As long as it's not 4:20, I know what kind of physical therapy that would be.
Yeah, that's mental therapy.
Oh my gosh, I'm gonna pee because we have 2 minutes.
That's all you need.
Turn off your mic. Oh wait,
we have 7 minutes, but it's all good.
Right.
Yeah,
but it was dramatic.
Yeah.
Tom, I see that you noticed my mother is now part of our DTNS bosses Slack.
Zephyr.
That's right.
Is that bad? Should I not out her name? I mean,
No. Her name is Linnell Lane, like in her little,
in her profile. That's cool. Like, I didn't realize I'd even invited her because I just do a mass, selection.
Sure. Well, I didn't know my mom, used Slack. She might be using it for the first time.
That's great.
Which I know. I was like, well, if you like lively banter about all things tech, you're going to love this group.
I bet she'll find a little channel that she enjoys in there. There's all kinds of good stuff. There's an entertainment channel and a random channel and an Android channel.
Yeah.
This will be our new selling point. Become an analyst, get to talk to Sarah's mom in Slack.
That's right. Yeah, for everybody who wants us to talk more about food and recipes, you could just unload that on her. She loves that stuff.
Cool.
She loves it. She's a really good cook, too. Better than me.
Maybe that should be a DTNS Labs.
Cooking?
Some kind of food.
Well, this is something that it's a sort of a dream show, right? Talk about food. How hard could it be? It's like some people do it really well and some people don't.
Yeah.
So I've thought for years, like the enthusiasm is there.
Right.
But how does it, is it a comedy? Is it, because I'm not a chef, I'm not a.
We toyed with making East Meets West a food oriented show because we would always have our conversations over dinner after we recorded it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's something there.
Yeah. And it's, then there's sort of like the dinner in a movie where it's like not really about food, but yeah, the food's incorporated. I don't know. I want someone to just be like, here's the perfect show, make it. And then then they're happy.
Is there a Patreon milestone that we can say, if we get to this level, we'll do a food show? Or is it, if we get to this level, we promise not to do a food show?
That's funny. No promises unless we get to this next milestone. That's very passive aggressive. I love it.
And then the next milestone will be the reveal of what we chose. Like, we get to this milestone, we either make a show or we promise not to make a show. And then once you reach it, you say, well, for 5% more, we'll tell you what we decided.
Oh, man. Yeah. Some sort of abusive power. I'm not sure what, but.
Yeah, no doubt.
I don't know. It's the zeitgeist.
I'm going to pour myself some juice because we have 3 minutes.
3 minutes. 3 minutes, folks. 3 minutes. 3 minute warning. Get your juice.
So are you just hanging around Anaheim then for the entire time you're down here, Scott?
Yeah, I'll be doing con stuff the entire time. So I've got interview stuff on Friday, the rehearsal thing on Thursday, and then there's the big party, and I got a live show and a couple things that night, and then. Friday and Saturday is full, and then I leave Sunday morning. So I'm pretty much stuck on the ground there the whole time. We may make it out to the new Blizzard esports thing in Burbank.
Oh, cool.
The arena.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to go to there's that. There's no confirmation yet, but that's a possibility. Could be a fun thing.
So you will not be on the show on All Saints Day.
I will not be. However, my plan that week is to have another labs out. So
nice.
So it won't really be missing a day. It'll be.
Yeah, yeah. Cool.
Yeah, if anything, this works better for that because I don't have to
switch
a bunch of days.
That's part of the benefit there.
Yep.
And then Thursday, don't forget to order your iPhone 10 for $1,000.
No, thank you.
I'm good. My 8 is just great.
My 2-year-old phone works.
8 is great. 8 is great.
I'm very happy with my 8.
I'm going to get the 10, but I'm not going to rush. I feel no need to rush.
HTC is announcing probably the U11 that same day. So then you can decide, like, wait a minute, maybe I shouldn't get the iPhone 10 tonight. Maybe I'll get the HTC U11.
Right. Yeah. They've one-upped them on the number.
Mm-hmm.
I have gotten to the point with my cracked screen where, because I have the 7, that only really half of the screen is legible at any point. And I'm just really used to it. And I've gotten good at it's really a DIY project at this point. And people now say to me like, oh my gosh, how long has your screen been so cracked? Strangers will say things like that, at the grocery store, sitting at the cafe. So I'm like, no. I mean, at this point, it's a science experiment. How long can I go? And I do quite a bit of work on it, actually. So there you have it. I'm not rushing for the 10.
Yeah.
Sheeple.
Could have got the 8.
It's not different enough.
All right.
It's like if I know that there's a better camera, then I have to get that one.
It's camera. Camera's always what gets Eileen to.
Yeah. It's just a selling point for me because it's the only camera I'm going to use ever. You know, my DSLR is in a box.
I think that 10 is the form factor moving forward. I need it to
Thrumwald.
Cook for
here. Thrumwald. Thrumwald in the chat room. This is an uncracked iPhone screen. He says, I feel like there are people with uncracked iPhone screens, but I can't recall the last time I saw one.
I never cracked them.
I scratched the last couple, which I didn't used to do at all, but not, but that's, there. You can't even tell really most of the time.
I'm eBaying my 7 Plus for pretty good scratch for no scratches.
All right, we ready?
Yeah.
Here we go.
Hey, everyone. Do you love the fact that DTNS is ad-free as much as I do? And would you like to keep it that way? Well, it's super simple. Just shoot over to dailytechnewsshow.com/support and find out how.
This is the Daily Tech News for Wednesday, October 18th, 2017. From DTNS headquarters in Los Angeles, I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I am Sarah Lane.
And from the smelly elevation of Salt Lake City, Utah, I'm Scott Johnson.
Why is it smelly?
I don't know. You know what? Honestly, Tom, I forgot to write it and just finished it. So I had to have something.
There you go. Roger Chang from an undisclosed location joins us as well. Sir, how are you?
I am fine from my undisclosed location.
Let's start with a few tech things you should know. Samsung announced Bixby 2.0 will incorporate Viv Labs tech. Viv Labs, if you recall, was founded by the creators of Siri and acquired by Samsung. Bixby 2.0 will be able to answer more complex questions and interact with more services. The SDK will start in private beta and will be invite only.
Regina Dugan, former director of DARPA, also formerly the leader of Google's advanced technology and products team, is soon going to be formerly of Facebook too. Dugan has been head of Facebook's secret F8 hardware lab for about 18 months, but announced she will leave in early 2018 to lead a new endeavor.
No longer her fate.
Yep, moving on to F9 probably is next. Tuesday, ZTE introduced the Axiom 5, a flip phone that opens to allow two 5.2-inch touchscreens side by side. Axon M will go on sale with Docomo in Japan and AT&T in the U.S. with price and availability coming by the end of the year.
Yay, another one of those.
Double to your pleasure.
All right, here's some more top stories, and I think this one is important if you really want to understand what's going on with Apple, so pay attention. GE and Apple are partnering on an iOS SDK for GE's Predix platform, P-R-E-D-I-X. Predix connects industrial machines, wind turbines, jet engines, elevators, to data centers so that data analysis can help predict things like when they might fail you so that they don't fail you, preventative maintenance, increased cost efficiency, stuff like that. Now, as a showcase, GE's Applications Performance Management app will make more data available more quickly to managers in the field, and GE will make iOS devices standard for its 330,000 employees. Apple will also be offering Predix to its enterprise customers when it's out convincing people to use iPads and Macs in the office. Apple has deals with Accenture, IBM, Cisco, Deloitte, and SAP now. Okay. I remember when they first, I think the first one might have been IBM, a little fuzzy on that, but when they first started doing these enterprise deals, I said, this is very interesting. Let's see how far down the road they get. They're getting very far down the road. The SDK and the APM app will be available for download on October 26th as part of GE's Mind and Machines conference. And the reason I mean, this is big news anyway, but I'm making such a big deal out of this because a lot of folks look at Apple and go, oh, well, if hipsters buy the new iPhone X, that's Apple's success story. And granted, they have to have good machines to make this other part work. But this is Apple's backbone now. Tim Cook has been quietly doing this out of the public eye, making these solid enterprise deals, which are rivers of money into Apple.
One thing I notice about this is it doesn't feel just like a Tim Cook initiative come to fruition.
Oh, no.
It feels like even in those early iPhone days, the big complaint was, especially with the proliferation at the time of Raspberry or raspberries, blueberry devices, not blueberry. What am I trying to say?
Blackberry?
Yeah. Blackberry.
One of them berries.
Which berry is it?
Has it been that long you've forgotten the name? Wow.
Okay. Raspberry Pi, fair, but blueberries.
I like blueberries. What
podcast
can I tell you?
Podcast syndication? I don't know.
That was funny.
This idea that at the time there was a lot of criticism saying, well, these will never be in the enterprise and that's where the growth is. And what are you going to do, Apple? What are you going to do? And there was a lot of back and forth about that. It needed to support Exchange servers and didn't. And now finally we're seeing that completely turn around. And it's taken a little while. But like you said, that's interesting to see that this has been kind of quietly happening in the background. And this probably represents billions of dollars in potential revenue for Apple.
Yeah. And it's a different approach than Microsoft, which is kind of business to business, or Amazon with cloud services, Amazon Web Services, things like that. Even IBM, which is having a good sales turnaround now. They had a good earnings report. They aren't doing the same approach. This is sort of straddling the fence between consumer and business and seemingly making a go of it.
Some more announcements, this time from HP. The company announced a 14-inch tablet with a pen and detachable keyboard called the ZBook X2. It has a quad-core Kaby Lake Core i7 processor and NVIDIA Quadro M620 GPU. It has up to 32 gigs of RAM, 2 terabytes of solid-state storage, and up to 4K resolution with 10-bit color. The ZBook X2 also has a kickstand, an SD card reader, an HDMI port, 2 USB 3 ports, and 2 USB-C ports with Thunderbolt support. Pricing starts at $1,750, and it goes on sale this December in the U.S. No global pricing yet, but quite a few ports. They really got us covered there.
Yeah, well, USB-C with Thunderbolt's important. And I know you mentioned on headlines this morning, Sarah, that this is very focused on creativity.
Yeah. In fact, HP announced this as part of Adobe's conference that's happening in Las Vegas right now. So the focus is very much on creative professionals now have this detachable PC that can do all these things and you can buy a pen. And it's, you know, and Scott, you probably have some thoughts about this too, but it seems very focused on making a creative professional, whether it's photography or drawing or, you know, whatever, more attractive to buy an HP product.
They have a real opportunity here. As people probably heard on my recent DTNS Labs report on kind of the lineup of digital tablets this year for illustrators and professionals who are using these devices for art. Microsoft has slipped quite a bit when it comes to lag and pen performance. And some of this stuff is still sort of being sussed out. But overall, their push to make Windows 10 a platform attractive to creatives is really, really strong. And I'm very curious how this one would perform. They've gone so far as almost partnering with Adobe in some ways. There are Photoshop, Illustrator, and Lightroom shortcut keys built right into the device itself. So that's always interesting, because if you embed hardware that literally mimics software functionality, it means that you must really be believing in a platform to do that. Elsewise, what if Adobe changes their interface or things get weird? So I always see that as kind of a big deal. So whether or not this thing will perform well or not, we'll have to wait and see, get some review units and see what's going on. But I think it's exciting to see more and more traditional PC and notebook manufacturers get into the creative space. And they seem to be following Microsoft's lead. And I think that's good for everybody.
Well, this is the fulfillment of the promise of the Surface, which is have a workstation in a tablet. I mean, the keyboard cover here is a real looking keyboard. It's not a cloth fabric-y thing. And the specs, as you heard, are insane. Now, granted, 1750 doesn't give you these max specs. It's going to cost you a lot. But, you know, the idea of a tablet also being your workstation, I think is pretty compelling.
Yeah, and the price really, honestly, for what they're saying isn't bad. It's cheaper than Wacom alternatives, which are kind of the standards. So if it can perform in those levels, then great. But that's really the trick here. We need to see how it performs, if that pen and that interface works well. I mean, from the photos and from what little information we have, we don't know a ton about the pen or the ink engine or any of that stuff. But once we do, we'll see if HP can be a player in that space.
We know that Wacom worked with them on the pen, though. That is.
Oh, we do know that. Yeah, oh, that's great news.
Yeah.
Because the best Surface tablet so far was the Surface 2, and it used the Wacom pen and the Wacom engine, and it was a far superior product to the 3 and 4. So that's already got me more excited than 5 minutes ago.
Are you excited about Lightroom, though?
Well, all right. So I did a little looking into this. Here's what else we know from Adobe's event that just started. Adobe's announced a new version of Adobe Photoshop Lightroom CC, now a full cloud-based photography service. In the past, it was a desktop-based tool. If anybody out there is doing professional photography or touch-up work, you knew that this was quickly becoming part of your workflow, especially given that not a lot has happened on Apple's front with Aperture. Along with its dedicated Mac and iOS app, the new cloud service makes editing and organizing photos easier. The Lightroom CC cloud service comes with 1 terabyte of storage plus Photoshop CC and access to Lightroom for mobile for the web for $19.99 a month or $14.99 for the first year for existing photography subscribers. So they're trying to catch you a little bit of a deal. It's also a standalone version of Lightroom CC plan for those who don't need Photoshop access. Also has 1 terabyte of storage and access to the mobile and web apps for $9.99 per month. And for mobile-only users, there's a Lightroom mobile plan for iOS that offers 100 gigabyte of cloud storage for $4.99 a month. I've talked to 3 photographers who are working full-time in this field. I should probably disclose one of them is my daughter, who does full-time portrait and wedding photos. Her lifeblood is Lightroom CC. Uses it every day for every shoot, all the time. And I thought I was going to contact her and she'd go, ugh, I don't want to have to worry about these on the cloud. What if I have a connection? That's going to be a bummer. I thought all of those were going to be her answers. I fully expected that. And she said, no, Dad, I'm stoked about these changes because now I can whip out my phone or my tablet in the client's office and say, let's make these changes right here. What do you think about this filter? What do you think about this color change? And do it all in the same original files, raw files even, that are stored in the cloud, and then she can access later on her production machine. So I thought, well, maybe she's 1 out of 3. I tried 2 other photographer friends of mine. All of them are echoing this. So apparently people are excited about this. I was worried it would mean no connection. I don't control my files. There's still a big question about if I cancel CC subscription, how do I make sure all my photos are okay? How long do I have to get them down? It would be nice if I could have them in both places, if that was an option. Like, I have all that going through my head, but it seems like people who use Lightroom as their bread and butter, I mean, I haven't talked to everybody. Obviously, these may be outliers, but they seem pretty excited about it.
Yeah, I've seen both reactions. Lori Grunin, who's covered photo for CNET for years and is super smart, was very critical of this for all the reasons you're talking about. Like, I don't want it to have to be in the cloud. I miss that I can just buy Lightroom and use it and not have to subscribe. But I think that is people who've worked in it for a long time. Maybe folks who are newer to this are like, oh, yeah, tablet, cloud, internet's always around. It's fine. Good.
Yeah, and I had huge reservations about most of the CC lineup when they went live with the CC program, the Creative Cloud program. And all it took was like a month, and now I don't want to do it any other way. This is how I prefer it. There's a few issues with, like, they don't, you know, there's like some bugs that are with the current Mac OS software that are super annoying and shouldn't be there. So there's issues with cloud-based services. There's no question. But overall, this is so much better than me installing 20 disks and paying $2,500 a month a shot every time they update it. So I think probably people will come around on this too. They seem to be doing right by us as customers. This is another way, though, Tom, for them to eke out a little more subscription money every month. Yep. So
no doubt about that. Yep. All right. We talked earlier this week on the fact that people like to slap AI on things that aren't actually AI, and it's a very buzzword thing. But there is a development today that is significant. DeepMind published research on the latest version of AlphaGo Zero because it is now entirely self-taught. If you remember, the original AlphaGo was trained on a data set of 100,000 human-played Go games. They showed these games to AlphaGo to train it. AlphaGo Zero, however, was only programmed with the rules of Go and then trained itself with reinforcement learning. So it essentially just played itself until it got better. After 3 days of self-play, AlphaGo Zero could defeat the version of AlphaGo that had beat 18-time champion Lee Sedol. And after that, it got even better and could beat the most recent version of AlphaGo. AlphaGo Zero's lead programmer, David Silver, said, quote, "We've actually removed the constraints of human knowledge." Bum, bum, bum. It runs on 4 tensor processing units. Earlier versions needed 48, so it's even more efficient. And because it was not programmed to play Go specifically, AlphaGo Zero could be used to discover information in other fields. DeepMind is talking about maybe pointing at a drug discovery, protein folding, quantum chemistry, particle physics, material design, things like that. Reinforcement learning is a very hot emerging field in AI, and the grail is to create these things so that you don't have to give them anything. That's called supervised learning. This is unsupervised learning, where you just say, here's the rules of the game, learn it. Now, granted, the rules of the game of Go are very constrained, and it's a lot easier to deal with than things that are more nebulous, like materials design and stuff like that. So we'll see what kind of progress they make in real world situations. But this is a big advance.
Yeah, it's interesting. If you've got rules of a game, it's like, okay, there's a finite set of rules, right? There's an answer for every rule, and the computer can figure that out. Sounds like in not very long of time, and then get better. But when you're talking about something like new drugs, okay, well, that requires research that's got to be fed into the program at some point. The program isn't just going to, like, know that research exists somewhere on a
piece of paper. Right, you have to give it the medical information. Yeah.
It's cool, though.
Yeah.
One other thing I would just say about DeepMind, there's a lot of rumbling going on in the gaming space about them getting up on stage and actually showing work based on their announcement last year with Blizzard, studying AI and doing stuff with the StarCraft game specifically. We don't know what that is. Probably nothing to do with this, obviously, but if you're into what DeepMind's up to, we may get a little stage presence in a week and a half and know what they've been up to there.
Hey, guys, do you like sharing your physical location with everybody you know?
That no. I know, as long as I'm in control of it, maybe, yeah.
Okay, well, Scott, at least, probably isn't going to like this new feature on WhatsApp, which introduced a new feature called Live Locations, exactly what it sounds like for its iOS and Android apps. As the name suggests, you let people know where you are. Those are your contacts within WhatsApp, of course, but it's live. It can follow you around. We can now attach location to any chat, and that includes group chat, so you don't have to share with one person. You can share with all of your WhatsApp friends. Users can choose to share location for 15 minutes, 1 hour, or 8 hours, and then, of course, you can stop sharing location at any time. For anyone who thinks, how's this going to work? The new feature does use end-to-end encryption like all WhatsApp conversations do. Live location will be globally available within the coming days, says the company. This is something I will never use.
I might use it next week. Like at BlizzCon, we usually use one app or another that usually aren't encrypted that says this is where everyone is right now. So we can quickly find out where people are gathering, where we're supposed to meet. This might be a great alternative because now I can end-to-end encrypt that thing and only use it for the weekend, and then I don't have to do it again. So
yeah. And
I
mean, you control who sees it. It's not doing it for you. So
no, I don't know. Live location. It's like I was using Find My Friends for a while and we all just kind of were like, we don't want to do this anymore. I can see very specific event-based sharing because WhatsApp tends to crop up in those for me too. I'm not really chatting with friends that way unless we're like, we're all at a bachelorette party and where is everybody? That kind of thing. So I can see it coming in handy, but not really something I'm going
to
use.
Folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day, be sure to subscribe to Daily Tech Headlines at dailytechheadlines.com, available on the Amazon Echo, in the Anchor app, and on Google Home through Anchor. And that is a look at our top stories. Now, on Hacker News today, saw a really interesting Harvard Business Review article by David Berkus. He's an artificial. He's an associate. He's a real associate professor of leadership and innovation at Oral Roberts University. His article is called "Why You Can Focus in a Coffee Shop, But Not in Your Open Office." Now, he cites research that shows that people's primary problem with open office plans, cube farms, right, is the noise level and the sound privacy. By the way, the top complaint for people who have closed private offices is temperature. I thought that was interesting. A study by Ravi Mehta, Juliet Zhu, and Amar Chima in the Journal of Consumer Research found that people did the best on the remote associates test, which judges creative thinking, when they were exposed to 70 decibels of noise, which is equivalent to coffee shop chatter. They had four groups, 50, 70, and 85 decibels, and then another group with silence. The 50, 85 decibel, and silent groups showed almost no statistical variance between them. They were all just as good on this test. The people at 70 decibels did significantly better. So this study says, well, maybe being in a coffee shop somehow stimulates your creativity. The authors write, getting into a relatively noisy environment may trigger the brain to think abstractly and thus generate creative ideas. So why do people hate office chatter, which is about 70 decibels too? Shouldn't that also work and make you more creative? Another study by Luke Laverty, Eve Edelstein, and Richard Brink, published in the Building Research Information Database, found that face-to-face interaction, conversation, and acoustic interruption may disrupt the creative process. So Berkus took those two studies together and said, I think the problem is in a coffee shop, you're surrounded by strangers. So it's just white noise to you, 70 decibels of blah, 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 blah. Whereas if you're in an office, you know the people. You know that that's Lin Fu talking to CES about something. You know that that's Molly Wood on the phone next door. You can tell last time I worked in an office. But it's, you know, it's more distracting to you.
Interesting.
There's definitely something to that. I mean, I remember when we were working at Twit, it was not only an open office, but quite normally someone would be doing a show literally right next to me. And so I would turn on white noise. It was like there, I had like a white noise album and a few tracks that I really liked, you know, and just crank it up. So it was louder than the voice next to me. And that actually really worked because, yeah, I needed to not be getting specific information that was relevant to me. But I don't really agree that a coffee shop is great white noise, particularly because they're strangers. And if you're a person who likes to people watch or can't really ignore someone walking through a front door repeatedly, it's worse. I work in coffee shops when I need to here and there, but that would not be my choice. I'd rather work at home in total silence.
It's funny. I've had to wrestle with this all day. I think I'm going to take the point of view of there's something about them being strangers and knowing that there are certain social norms to that strangership. Like I don't want to be loud, so I'm disturbing them. And I like it when they're not being loud, but because I don't know their voices, I don't know their names, and I don't know what they're talking about, unless I hear something real crazy, it's easy for me to tune them out and focus. I find I get my best work done even when I'm alone, when I create that kind of environment, whether it's, you know, an old episode of MASH in the background or something else like that, where I can kind of just tune it out, but it still makes me feel like I'm in a place where I'm getting something done. If it's dead quiet, I'm terrible. Like I am not productive at all.
See,
my mind wanders too many places. So
this is the thing where it's going to vary person by person.
Right.
I have no doubt that these studies are accurate and I'd like to see more studies, you know, verify it because I know most people are able to work in coffee shops because so many people work in coffee shops. I can't. I was reading this article in a coffee shop this morning while a guy next to me was talking about his bike race over the weekend and how he was trying to get his friend to join because he's seen him out on the bike before. So he knows he has one. Come on, you got to join us. I know all of this. I wasn't eavesdropping. I couldn't help it. And this is a problem I have. When I'm at a restaurant, I'll start laughing and my wife will say, what are you talking? I'm like, oh, you didn't hear their conversation? And she's like, no, I didn't hear their conversation. I just cannot tune out other conversations. I'm the opposite of you, Scott. I need absolute quiet when I have to work with anything that involves words.
Yeah, I would say, you know, there have been times where if there's ambient music around me, I'm cool. But as soon as you start introducing lyrics or actual human voices that I can pick up, and again, it's, well, I am kind of nosy, so sometimes I am eavesdropping. But like in a coffee shop, if I'm trying to work, I'm like really trying not to eavesdrop. I'm trying to work.
Yeah.
And it's excruciating. So
I was trying to read this article, and I can tell you all that about his conversation, even though I was trying not to listen to it.
That can definitely happen. Proximity matters, but also there's an unpredictability. So this is where I flip to the other side. If I knew that every time I went to the coffee shop, the conditions were going to be identical, that would be one thing, because then you could plan on it. But there's those times you get there, and for some reason, guy's on his, you know, a copy of Final Cut Pro in the corner with no shirt on, and it drives me nuts because I want to know why. You know, like there's all these things that can happen both visually and auditorially that'll throw you off. So,
no shirt, no service.
Exactly.
As someone who worked in a restaurant, not going to happen.
There's also, and I know that this is going to vary by person to person, but since we're talking about audio levels, I think a lot of it has to do with, where's the audio coming from? Can you see sort of the din of a conversation happening across the room? Or are people walking behind you? Like the feng shui, for lack of a better term, of where you are, I think is also really important. Where you're situated and where the audio is coming from.
You know, my thing isn't the noise directly, but for example, when a party or a group of people come and sit beside you at a coffee shop, and then like maybe half an hour they leave, what bothers me is I now know there's been a semblance of time has passed. Like there is like, time has passed. Like if I'm in a room by myself, I can ignore the clock because there's nothing to give away what time it is, right? I'm in an enclosed room with just the light. So it could be 1 hour, it could be 3 hours, but I can be focused and I'm not worried about that. As soon as you introduce people, it's the noise, but the fact that they're moving to me indicates that something's happened and that I should subconsciously, that I should also be like, oh, it's getting late. I should start wrapping up and moving on, even though I might be on a very productive streak.
Interesting. Well, we'd love to hear more what you guys think about this. You can share it in our Facebook group, facebook.com/group/DailyTechNewsShow, even on our subreddit, dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com, or just email us feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com.
You guys ready for the thing of a day?
Yes, I am.
Good. All right, let's check in with Chris Christensen, who found some interesting tech in his hotel room in England.
This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler with another Tech in Travel Minute. I'm recording this episode from a hotel room in London because that's where I'm traveling here for a couple weeks. And one of the things that surprised me when I entered this hotel room was there was a smartphone sitting on the desk in the room. And this is an interesting project. It's a phone called Handy. And it is a smartphone that is for use for your hotel guests while they are traveling there. Now, obviously, if I took it with me, I would expect to be billed for it, but it's an Android phone that has a custom solution on it so that it can automatically delete your data on the day that you log out in case you leave any data on it. And you can download different apps, and it includes supposedly data service and free international calls. And I say supposedly because I think the idea gets an A for effort. Unfortunately, the implementation gets a C because I've had trouble actually getting applications to download like they're supposed to from the downloads system. So I think this is an interesting idea. I'll be interested to see if other people do it more in the future and possibly a better implementation. I'm Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler.
Well, that is very interesting. I did not get a free phone in my hotel room to use. Well, I guess it wasn't free, but there was no phone in my hotel room to use when I went to London recently. It does seem like a hotel kind of thing, right? It's got the mini bar aspect of kind of tricking you into spending money by using the data and making calls out and about. But it could be the modern replacement for the in-room phone.
Sure.
Yeah, because the in-room phone, especially when you go international, it's like even when there are instructions, like this is how you call out, it always seems to be harder than it needs to be. But yeah, I mean, if you've got to call somebody, that's a nice perk of a hotel room. I mean, it's better than them saying you could have free Wi-Fi as a paying guest or fast Wi-Fi for $15.99 a day.
Oh, my London hotel room was like, you can pay for the slow Wi-Fi or pay more for the fast Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Oh, that's even more insulting.
Yeah, it was really
like, what would you like to pay for?
This to me is total stopgap. It's not going to be more than 10 years before everything we do is doable from our hand, from our pocket, from our device, from our embed, whatever it is we're doing. And hotels will no longer be able to figure out ways to skim off the top of our communication needs. So,
well, you know, with Airbnb hotel on the horizon, what will hotels even be in 10 years?
True. Good point. True that. Yeah. Our message of the day actually comes from our subreddit. NoxJL posted the following. DTNS frequently plugs Le Rendezvous Tech as an excellent French language technology podcast. And while I don't speak French, I love the idea of listening to a podcast on familiar topics in other languages. Given the broad listener base of DTNS, it seems likely to me that the listeners can recommend other non-English language technology podcasts that they enjoy. If you have a favorite non-English technology podcast, please post it in the comments, and I'll keep a running list here in the main post. We'll have a link directly to his thread in the show notes. You can just go to dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com and find it. I'm looking for a good Spanish language technology podcast myself, so I'm curious if anybody has some recommendations out there.
Yeah, I noticed that subreddit this morning when I was looking for stories for our headlines, because the subreddit is a nice place to hang out, the DTNS one. And I was like, well, that's not exactly a story. But then I was like, oh, that's a really nice service. And I'd be really interested in more French podcasts myself, even though Rendezvous Tech is a good one.
Absolutely. Scott, what language would you like to listen to your podcast in?
Well, I have some rudimentary Korean skills. I grew up in a household, very, very mixed household of a lot of adopted siblings that were from Korea. My brother Matt's very fluent in Korean. And I know he listens to tech podcasts and a lot of music and all kinds of other stuff in Korean. And he probably has a suggestion. So I'll see what he's got. But I mean, I'd like to see tech podcasts and everything. I'd like to see a future where podcast apps automatically take what we're saying today and in real time translate it for those who want to hear it in other languages.
We were just talking about that the other day. The idea that, you could have some sort or host a show with somebody who's speaking another language entirely, but the two of you can figure it out based on some conversion.
Come help see that. Well, thank you, Scott Johnson, for joining us. What else you got going on to tell folks about?
Oh, there's always something going on. Tonight, I'll mention this one. If you're into the video game Heroes of the Storm, one of Blizzard's many esports-focused video games, then you might be interested in our 100th episode of Core, which happens tonight over at frogpants.tv at 7 p.m. Mountain Time. If you want to come live and check it out, we're giving away a virtual ticket for the BlizzCon proceedings. I think that's a $50 value or so for those who can't go and can't afford or can't get, for whatever reason, the VT. We will have a virtual ticket to give away during that episode. So check that out tonight if you are at all fans of that or MOBAs in general. I think you'll have a good time. It's over at frogpants.tv. For everything else, find me at frogpants.com or Scott Johnson on Twitter.
This show is only supported by its patrons, both those who, on patreon.com/DTNS, and a shout out to the folks who donate directly to us on PayPal. We've had several of you lately make a yearly or one-time contribution, which we kind of consider our capital expenditures budget, so to speak. So big thanks to everyone who supports us however they do it, whether it's patreon.com/DTNS, PayPal, or shopping in our store at dailytechnewsshow.com/store, even just telling folks about it. We could not do this show without you, and we only do it for you. Thanks again for supporting us.
Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We are live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC at alphageekradio.com, diamondclub.tv, and I tweeted out dailytechnewsshow.com/live today. So, you know, one of those will work for you. And of course, our website is dailytechnewsshow.com.
Back tomorrow with Justin Robert Young. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Yeah, right on the dot for the time.
Actually, I know, right? Really good, you guys. Well done.
Good show.
I enjoyed it too.
Immensely.
Yes.
What should we call it?
Well, I had a thought early on about raspberries, blueberries, and blackberries.
Yes.
I don't know if that is funny to anybody but me, but I got a good chuckle out of it.
you know, you're allowed to submit titles into the showbot as well. Don't hesitate.
I did not know that.
You can always do that.
I didn't know that either, that I could
do it through the chat.
Yeah. For anybody who doesn't know, if you're in irc.chatrealm.net, you type !! S a space, and then your title suggestion, and it goes to showbot.tv.
Well, I'm happy to report the top two currently are Scott likes blueberries or Scott is confused about berries. So
!! S space, and then whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay. This is fun. I didn't know this.
Oh yeah.
There's Bang also wake me up before you off a go-go. I think we had something like that.
It sounds familiar, doesn't
big
it?
Yeah. AlphaGo story. The Sound of Silence, WhatsApp Doc, The Merit of a Silent Workplace.
Yeah, it did.
What time is it, Roger? Blueberry iPhone. One of those berries. Tommy dropping no eaves. Coffee shops produce more. It's the caffeine. Silent productivity. Rivers of money. Eight is great. Oh, that's pre-show. Use WhatsApp to find Carmen Sandiego. Stranger focusing.
That's working hard, that one.
Yeah.
Appreciate that, Silverblade.
Raspberries, blueberries, raspberries.
Raspberries, blueberries, and blackberries is skyrocketing to the top, Sarah.
Wow. All right.
Well, I didn't mean to exude show name power.
It's all right. It's a, you know, it's first of all, it's a democratic vote in showbot.tv. Second of all, this is a
corporatist authoritarian government.
This is a whatever it is.
Yeah.
We don't have to follow
democracy, in fact.
Yeah. It's also it's better than the one that's on top or now tied with. So I'm all for yours over that.
I liked very confusing episode.
But. Yeah, but was it that confusing?
No,
it was just it was just a funny moment.
Yeah,
because you were like raspberry pie. No, that's not right. What am I thinking of? Blueberries. No.
Well, then I called that poor professor artificial instead of associate.
I could have said Barry White. I could have really gone far with it.
Oh gosh, who else is Barack Obama? Sometimes
it was our Joe Biden like episode. There were so many gaffes.
Yeah. Just Biden gaffes. Those were great.
Classic. Simple. You know, I think George H.W. Bush and Joe Biden are my favorite gaffers.
Oh, you didn't like Gerald Ford? Well, actually, he was more of a
tripper. His was more, physical. And also, it was exaggerated by Saturday Night Live. He actually just tripped the once.
Yeah. But that's what SNL does. My favorite presidential moment of all time is Bush deftly dodging that shoe in that conference that one time.
Oh, did he say good throw?
I remember that.
Cat-like reflexes. Insane.
He kind of complimented on the throw initially. Did he?
Did he? Yeah. I don't remember that part.
I thought he did, and then a second shoe came, and he missed that one too. Yeah. It just showed a lot of athleticism I didn't attribute to him.
No, he's a... I guess he played sports. Must have.
Did he?
Shoe dodging. Before he became
during the show, while I'm standing here doing the show, which I have been standing here since, I don't know, 1:15 or so, my watch told me to stand. Time to stand. I'm like,
you got to stand taller, Tom, taller.
How much more standing can I get?
That's so weird.
Well, it's not actually. So what it does is it just assumes your elevation is your sitting elevation because you've been in that position for so long. That it thinks you need to go higher to be standing, so you can go in though, I think, and set it.
But that's, I mean, for all the people who use standing desks regularly, right? I mean, that's a glaring issue.
I think
how would it do that? Because if standing elevation.
So every day when I do the show, I get a blank hour for standing during the show because it thinks I'm sitting.
Yeah, there's a way to do it though. Hold on.
Is there?
I saw this just the other day.
What if you're sitting at the top of a tall skyscraper, but you're standing at the base of it? Would it tell you to stand?
Let me ask you this, Tom. How many other times per day do you stand when your watch tells you to?
It generally doesn't tell me to, honestly. In fact, I only ever get the notification when I'm already standing. Like, I generally am standing, getting up and down enough that I almost never get it.
Okay. Maybe
you should treat it like opposite day and sit.
Well, so, I mean, let's say you settle into the couch for a movie. It's going to be more than an hour. No,
like that'll happen. But you know what? I'm such a fidgeter. Like, I always get up and get water or a snack or something.
I see. So you're actually, you're.
But yeah, no, if I'm sitting on the couch for a movie, that does happen.
Hmm. Anytime I've used any of those, you know, like time to stretch or time to stand or take a walk around the block or have a glass of water, like all things that in theory I want to be reminded to do are so annoying and they always come at the absolute wrong time that I just turn them off.
Yeah. Please be upstanding is what I'd like it to tell me.
Raspberries, blueberries, blackberries, the top with 15.
Oh, yeah. I've already exported the show with raspberries, blueberries, blackberries as the title.
Sarah, you should run for public office.
Totally. I mean, like, I've got the popular vote.
It pretty much works the same way. You just stand up and go, I think I'd like to be governor. And then people vote you in.
Yeah, you'll be governor.
Yeah. Okay. Gosh, you know, we could do like, think of the Patreon. Take over the world, you know?
Like, or would we have to...
Community can just like vote us into office.
Would that be a conflict of interest?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. But, yes.
But still pretty cool.
Really cool conflict of interest.
Yeah. I mean, it's 2017.
All just in. To say you did it, you know? Just once. I'm just kidding. Running for public office sounds like the worst.
Oh my gosh, yes. No way.
No way.
You really have to love public service, or you really have to love that environment.
I do not. My sister is a public official now. She is the county clerk of Bond County, Illinois, and she's replacing a midterm resignation, but she will have to run for office.
Oh. Better get her running shoes on.
I can see the attack ads already. Meg Seibert's brother is in with big tech.
Yeah, you can't. Well, you got to make sure you don't have any sword histories.
Yeah, I don't really.
Mudslinging.
Well, also, I mean, sibling history isn't enough to bring you down anymore, is it?
I don't know. Roger Clinton was pretty close, wasn't it?
Well, no, he didn't. He didn't bring him down.
It's hard to know what would bring anyone down at this point.
Yeah.
You know, it's the rules have gone off.
I mean, they've always kind of been that way. It's just that.
Poor Gary Hart. Gary Hart just must be looking at all of this going, F you all.
Yeah, no kidding.
And don't get me wrong. I'm not saying I would have voted for Gary Hart, or I think, you know, this is not an evaluation of him as a candidate. I'm just saying, like, he got driven out for way less than Clinton and others have been accused of.
Oh man, he's like a saint,
right?
I mean, it's just weird. I mean, even the morality police, their standards have shifted. Yeah, whatever.
Well, we're verging on talking politics rather than talking around politics. So blueberries, who loves them?
Oh,
I like them, but only in pies.
So religion. Wait, no.
Blueberries, the favorite of the Republican Party. Uh-oh. What have we done?
I bet you could. I bet you could politicize blueberries.
You can politicize anything.
Yeah.
My favorite blueberry, I mean, besides like just like a blueberry pie or something where it's specifically a dessert, if you have plain Greek yogurt and sprinkle some blueberries in there and then warm up a little honey and pour it over the top, that is a great, like, kind of half dessert, but not really snack.
That sounds delicious.
I like
delicious.
Taking just a bowl of berries and sprinkling yogurt on top.
Every morning I have some muesli with either Greek yogurt or kefir. And either blueberries or blackberries. And then I slice up a banana over them.
That's so you're a breakfast routine guy.
Yeah, I have become that.
Yeah.
I didn't used to eat breakfast. And then we started some diet years ago that required us to do something for breakfast that was fibery. And it's evolved over the years into this. Yeah. I do the muesli. Eileen does granola.
Hmm. I don't like to eat the same thing every morning. It's like there's something about I don't know. It like becomes monotonous and weird to me, but I do love breakfast. It gets me out of bed.
That was my childhood. I used to eat nothing but cornflakes for breakfast. Years, in fact. Maybe mix up with a raisin bran or two.
I used to eat Top Ramen for breakfast. And I would still. I just have gotten out of the habit.
I used to, when I was in high school, my brother and I would get a can of cream of chicken soup. This is so gross.
Wait, this is your breakfast.
We dump it in a cup, fill the rest with water, but it was never enough to truly dilute it. It'd be warm water. We'd shake it up real good and drink that on the way to the bus.
Why?
Because we were insane. I have no idea. I don't know where my mom was.
You must have not hated the taste.
No,
you were feral children.
You're right.
You've scavenged their canned food.
They're like, it's chicken.
There's chicken in here somewhere.
Yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for joining us. I didn't realize that was sticking out like that. You can see the wires. Oh, no. He gets his answers fed to him. This is it for today's show, but we'll be back tomorrow. Join us then. Love each other.
Yeah. See you guys.
Oh, and patrons, bye. patrons, you guys. Patrons. Imagine all of our arms embracing you in the chastest of appreciative hugs right now. And if you're not too creeped out, thank you for supporting us. Goodbye.